Today's topic is good grief, and we're all acutely aware of pain, of grief, and of loss. We're aware that when we suffer loss, we cry and we can be miserable. And we live in a society that often encourages us not to show it. And a society that often encourages us not even to feel it or to admit it. And I think this is a terrible way to go. I'm very aware of the recent losses in my life, friends and family members. I'm aware of the losses, some of the losses in the community that we are all going through separately and together. I'm aware also of those losses out there, those changes as people we think we know, perhaps vicariously or a little bit personally, leave the scene. It's been a bad 30 days for columnists. From Art Buchwald to the great Molly Ivins. C.K. Yang's service was yesterday, and he was a man who was very kind to me in my youth, along with Rafer Johnson. They were really kind of mentors. Not that I developed a track career, I just kind of run from issues, but he was a wonderful and generous-hearted person, and we're all blessed with people in our lives whose removal from before our eyes brings tears to our eyes, as is appropriate, as is part of the blessing of having people who are near and dear to us. Society sometimes says, well, look, if you're really faithful, you're not going to grieve because God had a better plan. God needed an angel. There's a wonder and a way and a reason to every terrible thing that happens. It only appears to be terrible. Personally, I find no consolation in that. But for those who do, take it. One of the most important things as we deal with issues about grief is that people who care about us will say things that seem insensitive, perhaps crazy, totally uncomforting, and I have heard almost every seemingly dumb thing that can be said, and I've said probably most of them at one time or another. And I think the really crucial issue is to listen to intent as opposed to the words. Because what all of us mean to say in these times when we feel so helpless is, I'm thinking of you. I care for you. I feel for you. We can't take away the pain. We shouldn't take away the pain. If there were a pill I could take that would remove all of the pain that I have felt, from the loss of father, from the loss of mother, from the loss of dear friends, I might be tempted to take it. Certain nights at 3 o'clock in the morning when alone with the sound of my heart. I might stare at it and wonder if I should take it, but I would like to think that I want to feel. That I want to feel because, in words with which I will close this talk, our grief is according to our blessing. And think of what kind of hell it would be not to have people in our lives that we care enough about to weep, to shake, to grieve, and to mourn. That would be the definition of hell, not the pain that we feel. Pain is pain, and it is unpleasant, but it is also a reminder that we have been blessed with people who have been with us through some portion of our lives for however long. when I was a very young clergy person and knew a great deal more than I know now, I was very opposed to flowers, particularly cut flowers at funerals and at memorial services. They just seemed like a terrible waste of money. I mean, what was this? This was just one of those little plots to keep the florists in money, because what does it mean? But as I have grown less sure of myself and more open to poetry and metaphor, I have begun to understand that these are wonderful metaphors for human life. This flower is cut off from the earth. It's cut off from its roots. It's dead. But it still has so much to give us in its pattern and its color. Some flowers in their scent, they are still here to inspire us with a sense of beauty. And a sense of beauty at all stages. This is cut off, and it's cut off in a very small bud, and that is terribly frustrating, and we want to scream, why? Why wasn't it allowed to develop and open and flower? Given another couple of hours out of water and one more day even in water, this particular kind of plant, the flowers will fade. The petals will fall. And even as they fall, they're a metaphor for us as we age and change. And there is beauty in the petals even as they have fallen onto the counter or onto the floor. Neither the bud, nor the flower, nor the petals is technically alive. But they are still in front of us to give us something. When we suffer the loss of people who are young, there is a sense of frustration, a sense of anger, of rage that does not go along with the usual articles of faith, to quietly and stoically accept all, and particularly to accept those things that we cannot change. And death is one of those things that we cannot change. But what we must accept is the fact that we can mourn and rage against the dying of the light, not just for ourselves, but for others whose light fades from our external vision and has to be moved inside our hearts. And that's a terrible price and a terrible cost. And we get to howl as Lear howls with, why should a dog draw breath and not somebody that I care about? Why should bad people prosper and I have lost somebody important and wonderful and beautiful? And we the cry is often confused between the why me and my loss and why them and their absence from all of the joys and the vicissitudes of life. To cry out why is a fundamental right, and part of grieving, and I believe part of healing. To answer the question is to commit a gross violation of healing and of grieving, because there are often not good answers. And when we ascribe answers to fate, to God, to all of those silly things that we sometimes say to each other, it creates monstrous theologies and with monstrous implications. Crying why does not demand an answer. The howl, the moan, the cry, the question is enough. It used to be an old Unitarian Universalist bumper sticker, "To question is the answer." I like that. Because the question our right and ability to question those things in our lives, the personal things, the deeply personal things, the deeply emotional things, as well as the world out there, is absolutely normal and appropriate. It's answering the questions that we tend to define others out and create some real problems. We each have to find our own kind of answers, but not cosmic ones. Sometimes all we can do is cry. All we can do is to be emotionally honest with ourselves. That it is not impious, it's not somehow wrong. Oh, well, death is natural, so we should just accept it. Yeah, lots of things are natural, and you may have to accept at some level, but we can still cry and rage and shake and have all of the full feelings that human beings have when we are dealing with death, with grief, and with mourning. We also know that there's no one single right way to do it. I have seen in my professional career, as well as just being a human being, people react in all different kinds of ways. And it isn't a right or a wrong. I have seen from our society's stiff upper lip, and for those of us who are old enough to remember when JFK was assassinated, the funeral, and how much good press there was that Jackie held herself together and John saluted the casket. Of course, he had no idea what death was at his age. But that was showing how you handle it with class. It's okay not to handle it with that kind of class unless that's what you need to do. And if that's what you need to do, it's the way that you handle it. But denial is something that I promise professionally, I can tell you, doesn't work. When my father-in-law, before he was my father-in-law, passed away about 30 years ago, and I did the eulogy, my mother-in-law, who was not yet my mother-in-law, was not handling it with Anglo-Saxon stoic stiff upper lip. She was handling it with Eastern European screaming and keening and crying and trying to throw herself in the grave. I'll admit that was a little discomforting, but that's what she needed to do. When you look at biblical texts and Kohelet, Ecclesiastes, there's a time to rend, and that comes from the tearing of clothes in despair. And the tearing of clothes was a substitute for the tearing of flesh as people demonstrated their grief. If it's performance, it's one thing. But if it is something that a cry that is coming from our heart and our soul about loss, it is what we need to do. We need to feel. We need to recognize what we feel. I think probably the most disturbing experience I ever had was when a person who was, I've told the story before, an impossibly old person was killed body surfing in Hawaii. And he was impossibly old because I was 26 and he was 45, and I didn't have any idea why he was body surfing in the first place. Was the man crazy at his age? But I remember going to the airport to meet the widow and the casket that was on the airplane, and she was just great. He is never going to get old. He's not going to have to give up mountain climbing and hiking or body surfing. It's all the best of all possible worlds. That's the thing about grief is, as the ad says about cars and mechanics, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. We can deal honestly with those things that are just beyond our ability, we believe, to bear, or it can nibble away. But we can't just banish it by saying it's the best of all possible worlds, and either in a theological system or the at least he won't get old system, not deal with the core issue of loss, of the absence of someone from in front of our eyes, from inside our arms. Because inside the heart is a good and warm place to carry the people we love, but it's not the same. Grief, it's not a terrible thing. It's a reminder that we're alive. It's also a reminder that we're vulnerable. It's a reminder that someday it's going to be our turn. Every time I go to a memorial service or participate in one, I'm aware that everybody in the room is dealing with their own mortality. And most of us have a day-to-day system of plausible deniability. Where, as William Saroyan said as he lay dying, he said, you know, I knew that death was inevitable, but I thought it would make an exception for me. I think all of us have kind of that sense, alternating occasionally with hysteria. And we go back and forth because we are human beings with a lot of complex and often contradictory feelings. Dealing with grief is never an easy thing. Even when we go to take consolation, and I will admit to you that I am a professional opportunist in terms of taking consolation. If, as several of my friends are fading away over a period of time, we will take consolation that they had a chance to say goodbye, a chance to tell people how much they meant to them, a chance to hear from people how much they are loved and will be loved, and how their memory will be carried in our hearts. And there is consolation in that. And there is also consolation when someone goes all of a sudden without pain, without fear, without deterioration, and we say, well, at least they didn't suffer. They're both true. And we take the consolation where we can. But somewhere inside, it's important to remember the issue of loss. It's important to remember that while we may do it in our own ways, that grief, and it's kind of interesting because it's related to a grievance, that our complaint about our mortality is something that is built into us. We are not meant to experience these losses or our own impending loss, whenever that's going to be, with some sense of objectivity and equanimity. We are reminded that this miracle of life, this time that we stand in the light, is limited. That somewhere between the eternities of darkness, whether we come back again or see anything on another dimension, today the sun is shining. And we are breathing, and we are thinking, and we are wondering, and we are weeping, and we are laughing, and we are with friends who share that situation. We have a right to grieve, to miss, to mourn. We have a right to question, to cry. But remember, not as an act of denial, but as an act of compensation, that truly our grief is according to our blessing. And tears are a tender tribute of affection for people who are gone, but not forgotten, who are moved from in front of our eyes to inside our hearts, there to keep them alive as long as we live, and there to let their lives and the inspiration of their lives, whether young or medium or old, touch us, change us, inspire us, be as the flowers, something that can give to our own lives and hearts and actions and tears a greater sense of purpose and resolute dedication to live today with an appreciation of the light, of the miracle, of each other. And to laugh, to cry, to sing, to dance, to mourn, to miss, to do all of those seasons of the heart through which we live, and to accept that they are patterns in the dance of life that we all dance together. And though there are stages and moments that we prefer to others, as Rick Maston wrote, without the dark there is no light. If nothing's wrong, then nothing's right. So let it be a dance. And I think we dance very well with our arms about each other in this community. We have different ways to mourn, different ways to celebrate, different losses, different gains, different stages of life that we are all going through. We are all of the flowers at all of their stages, and together we create something that is quite wonderful and real and ephemeral and more precious for being ephemeral.